The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Midwest Swing, episode number 5. As always, I'm your host, Brandon Warren. You can find me on Twitter at Brandon _ Warren. You are listening to us on the Cold Omaha Podcast Network at Cold Omaha MN on Twitter. You can also find us at Midwest Swing Pod on Twitter. I am joined, as always, by my producer, Andy Carlson. What's going on, man?
Hey, just snowed in, shoveled my driveway 3 freaking times since it stopped snowing because of the wind, but it's all good.
Now, you're on the south side of the metro, is that right?
Yeah, I'm on the southly, so basically you guys up there got nada, essentially.
Yeah. I shoveled twice, but I think we maybe got like 5 or 6 inches, and honestly, it's been pretty easy digging out for us.
Yeah, but we got I have a snowblower, right? Except I really don't like using it because I like the workout of shoveling.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's sometimes I should just kick it on, but whatever.
Well, and so I tweeted yesterday I'd prefer to shovel twice than use that snowblower once because that machine terrifies me. So I shoveled twice. I'll probably have to shovel after we're off the show today, but. Yeah, digging out. It's not quite as bad as the East Coast. We'll bring in our guest here in just a second. I don't know if he was in any of the snow, but we'll find out here pretty quickly. Andy, how can people find you on Twitter?
At Andy Carlson Show. It's very original.
And I understand that we're getting the launch of Cold Omaha, the website, is coming up very quickly, I understand.
Yeah, it's actually up and running behind the curtain. We're doing some beta testing and kicking the tires, lighting the fires, that sort of thing. It looks really sexy, so I can't wait till that launches. And then, the show, for the downloads, it's doing pretty good for not having a website or a landing place now. But just give it time. Just give it time.
Yep, it's a slow burn, but honestly, you've been kind of the catalyst behind it, texting me every few days saying, let's go. And actually, I've appreciated that. So that's been good. We're already on episode number 5. We call
In between the genitals pictures.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Brett Favre, yeah. Man. Brett Favre. Yeah. So we recorded an emergency episode last week on the Twins, and their payroll had pretty good numbers on that. And we appreciate people listening. And if they are listening to this one and have not heard that one yet, please dive in and listen to me rattle on for about 58 minutes. Based on what I think is kind of the situation with the Twins and payroll, I'm a pretty moderate view kind of guy when it comes to payroll. Somebody yesterday on Twitter called me the voice of reason on Twins Twitter, which is probably the nicest thing anybody has ever said to me. So with that in mind, let's dive right into our guest, not physically, of course. We are welcoming the digital dandy himself, Dan Zimborski from the East Coast. Dan, how are we doing?
I'm doing pretty well because I did not do any shoveling in the recent weeks. I'm good.
You didn't have any snow last week?
No, I'm in Ohio. I'm from Baltimore. I'm in Ohio. But we were supposed to originally get 4 to 5 inches, which is nothing, but still enough that I had to go out and make effort. But we didn't get anything. And all my friends are from Baltimore. I mean, not all my friends, but most of my old friends are from Baltimore. So they all had like 3 feet of snow, so I had fun both not shoveling and the making fun of my friends who had to shovel and had pictures and nightmares and everything. So pretty good.
Yeah, that's actually kind of the perfect combination of not having to exert physically and being able to poke fun at people that you're close to. Now, how did you end up in Ohio? I for whatever reason I thought you were still in Baltimore, but how'd you end up in Ohio?
Family reasons. My mom lives in Ohio, and she's getting older, and she has some back problems and some leg problems. So it's more. I mean, she's not old yet, but it's useful for her to have me around because we don't have a big family. So I'm nearby, and really, I can work anywhere as long as I have a laptop and internet. So it's not quite the Caribbean or anything, but it's okay.
So Zip Central is wherever you make it, basically.
Yeah, as long as I have my computer. It doesn't run well on my laptop because I get cheap laptops because I tend to break laptops. I'm very irresponsible.
So you're pretty destructive?
Yeah, there's spillage and drops and cats and all sorts of things that can cause laptop computers to have shorter lifespans.
Well, those are all things that I'm planning on asking you about. First and foremost, kind of foundationally, when did you get into baseball and why? Like what was the natural hook for you with the game of baseball, and when did it start that you kind of caught the bug?
Well, I was really into baseball about from the age of three. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure how that happened, because really nobody remembers what they did when they were three. But I've always been a fan of baseball, and I as long as I can remember, and I don't actually know what the initial motivation was to follow baseball, because I was always into it. No. So yeah, I'm a baseball guy. I'm not one of those writers that is writing about baseball because that's where they got a job or something.
Now, didn't you – I don't know that there's a whole lot of guys that do it for any other reason, but didn't you recently share a picture of you when you were a young kid wearing some kind of baseball outfit or something like that?
Yeah, I was laying my claim to inventing the sideways baseball cap. Because that it's me when I was three, and I'm wearing an Orioles shirt and an Orioles hat, and the hat is sideways. And that picture was from 1981, so I'm laying my claim to having invented that. Before rappers, before Fernando Rodney.
that's pretty outstanding. Do you have a first like year that you remember watching baseball as a big fan? Like for me, it's 1993, which as a Twins fan is really unfortunate, because 1992 was their last really good year, and then they were awful from 93 to 2000. But 93 is that first year that I kind of cut my teeth on watching. I probably watched 100 games that year.
1983 was the first year I really have good memories of mm-hmm. following the actual events that were going on. So I always have a soft spot for the 83 Orioles, because, of course, they're the last Orioles team to win a World Series. So that's a good year to be your first to remember. But I'll always have a soft spot for the players on the team, like Mike Boddicker and Scott McGregor. And, of course, you know the stars, Ripken and Murray. But I'll always remember the second-tier players from the 83 Orioles, probably better than those of any other team.
So is your heart still in Baltimore baseball-wise, or have you kind of broadened since you're, you know, basically covering it for a job? Do you still have a loyalty to the Royals? Or not the Royals, the Orioles.
The Royals? Not the Royals.
Whoops.
The Royals are the team that always get me in trouble, because they totally destroyed my projections for them last year. So
bastards.
Yeah. Why? How could Volquez have worked out that well?
I didn't expect it.
I don't think anyone outside the Royals community expected it. But now I digress. I'm still a big Orioles fan, but I'd have to admit that my relationship as a fan with baseball has changed over the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. I don't really live and die with the Orioles. I won't even watch them if they're not the most interesting game on. In this day and age, where you're not just stuck watching the games for a certain team or two, I will always watch the games that I think are the most interesting. So it's a little different perspective. I still want them to win, but I'm not really the crazy fan type. I never really was crazy fan type. It's just my personality. But covering baseball does kind of change how you view the game and your relationship with it.
Now, Fangraphs projections have the O's as the, I believe, worst team in the American League. How do you feel about that?
Zips actually has them better than that.
Okay.
I'm not just saying that as a homer. I always do my
own. No, wait. As an Orioles homer or as a Zips homer?
Oh, I don't know. well, sometimes they're together. Well, Zips hasn't been all that nice to the Orioles all the time. So
sure.
Zips does see the Orioles, and I can't disagree with them, as more of a second-tier contending team that they could win a wild card simply because none of the American League teams are really all that great.
Right.
But they do need some things to go right. I mean, you look at the Orioles, they're essentially the same team that went 81-81 last year, except they swapped out their best pitcher for a couple of hitters. And that's a problem.
Well, yeah. And so when I look at them, because I started writing for Baltimore Sports and Life in the last few weeks, so it's kind of had me diving into them a little bit more in depth than I was before. I kind of view them, you know, not necessarily as the new Royals, but I think that that's kind of what they want to do. They have a strong bullpen with a manager who's really good at pushing the buttons, a rotation that is pretty weak, and an offense that I think is going to hinge on Chris Davis, honestly. I mean, they have a chance to be upper middle in the American League or lower middle and basically you know, bringing back Davis is what has kind of led me to believe they can be, you know, better than average. If you were to make one more move before the end of the offseason for this current Orioles team, do you have any player you would target, whether it's via trade or the last few remaining bodies left in free agency?
I actually don't, simply because really the players that interested me in free agency are now gone. Mm-hmm. Doug Fister was the last one, and I was really pushing. I mean, not them personally, because they don't ask me.
Sure.
But I was really pushing for them to bring in Fister, because, I mean, you have a lineup with you know, J.J. Hardy, Manny Machado in infield, Jonathan Scope. Chris Davis is a solid defensive first baseman. Someone like Fister could have had a lot of value in Baltimore, because, you know, he keeps the ball down. He doesn't allow a lot of home runs. But without Fister, then it's not as interesting. I think Dexter Fowler and Austin Jackson are good fits for the right team. But they're not going to push Adam Jones to a corner in Baltimore, so that's less exciting. And you talk about someone like Gallardo from Texas, well, now a free agent. I mean, he had a solid ERA last year, but he also has seen his strikeout rate just plummet from year to year. He's lost like 40% of his strikeouts in 3 years, and that's never a good trend for a pitcher.
Well, he's under 30. He's not 30 yet either. So, I mean,
yeah, so
honestly, it's not because he's old. It's just because the mileage seems to be piling up.
Yeah, I mean, he had 9 strikeouts a game for, like, the first 4 full seasons of his career. And he was under 6 last year. That is a big red flag. It's not like strikeouts in baseball have gone down at all. They've continued to increase. Well, so I think it could be trouble.
Maybe the Twins should be interested then.
The Twins.
No, they don't need another starter like that. There's no doubt about that. Well, what about, and you're gonna laugh at me because I tweeted about this yesterday, but would, on a 1-year deal, would you take a chance on Matt Latos?
Not if I'm the Orioles, okay. Simply because I think he would allow a ton of home runs in the park.
Sure.
I mean, you have to. The Orioles are gonna always be in a park that's not a huge run park, but is a good home run park. So you don't want a guy that's occasionally prone to the dinger in Baltimore. I could see him in somewhere like San Diego, maybe, or Seattle. Sure. I think he's a good pillow contract guy for a team. I just don't think he's a great fit for the Orioles.
So if you were to make a trade first, I'm under the assumption they need a fifth starter, and I wrote this yesterday, not a number 5 starter, but one more guy to round out the rotation. Because I don't think you can use Dylan Bundy as a starter. I'm not sure they like Wright that much. I don't think you want Vance Worley starting. Do you, first of all, are you under that impression that they could still add another starter, or is that kind of a ship that has sailed?
I think it's mostly sailed. If they were going to add a starter, I mean, they could still add Gallardo, but I wouldn't be crazy about that at all.
Right.
I think the ship has mostly sailed because the Orioles are kind of in this position where they don't really have a good farm system anymore. Machado obviously graduated several years ago now, and both Dylan Bundy and Hunter Harvey have had huge injury setbacks that have made them less desirable. At this point, there aren't a lot of pitchers that are interesting that they could get with players from their farm system. They would end up having to trade something that helps them this year. Like, hey, I wouldn't mind getting another starter, but if you're trading Kevin Gausman to get the starter, you're just kind of probably running in place. So I actually think unless they add something in free agency, there's not going to be anything major happening.
So you wouldn't trade necessarily for Andrew Cashner?
I don't know how they would trade. That's the problem. I don't know how they would trade for Andrew Cashner. They don't have a stable of desirable prospects to throw at them. They're not going to get a good pitcher for Christian Walker. It's just not happening unless there's drugs and alcohol and benders involved.
So, okay, a local angle here. How about Tommy Malone?
Tommy Malone's fun, but he's also kind of a Twins pitcher, let's just say.
He's also terrifying, yeah, in a park that might be home run prone. And he's played most of his career in big parks, Washington, Oakland, Minnesota.
When Tommy Malone ended up in Minnesota, my first thought was, of course he did.
Now, that was a pretty shrewd move to take Sam Fold off waivers and then say, hey, Oakland, you want Sam Fold again? You get a fifth starter for basically 6 weeks or 8 weeks or whatever it was of Sam Fold. I mean, that's pretty cool. Now, it's less cool when it's preventing the Twins from putting Jose Barrios or Trevor May in the rotation. I have to say.
Malone's not a player that he was pretty good in Oakland, but he just doesn't strike guys out ever. That kind of guy's always going to have kind of a thin margin for error. He does allow home runs, and a lot of times these low strikeout guys that survive, they can't afford to be home run prone.
So
he's a good, probably a perfectly suitable fifth starter, though.
That's the natural. If they needed a guy to just hold over for a year, I don't imagine the Twins would ask for much. But yeah, there might not be a good fit there either. I did want to ask too. How did you get into writing about the game? You know, I think everybody's got their story of their first quote unquote break or the first thing they did where people started noticing them. What was that for you?
Well, for me, I was involved in the sabermetric community on the internet at a pretty young age, mid 90s. I was 16, 17, 18 during those years, and I started hanging out on Usenet news groups. That's kind of a format that doesn't exist anymore, but was a lot more popular in the early days of the internet.
Is that the Dave Cameron thing, too, where he kind of came to
– Yeah, we all came up in kind of the same place. Same with Baseball Prospectus. They're also sure. Usenet people. Mm-hmm. And now it seems so archaic to talk about because this was a few years after the World Wide Web became a thing. So this was kind of a discussion forum 1996 version. And a lot of the sabermetricians and writers you see that are more numbers-based, we all kind of came from the same place, Usenet, rec.sport.baseball. I actually wrote a bit about this for Dan Glickman's blogathon over the weekend, so you can check that out. I don't have the link handy, but Google is our friend.
For sure. What was the first thing you wrote, though, that people really gravitated to?
Well, I wasn't really doing that interesting writing at the time. I was just mostly arguing baseball. Arguing baseball is kind of – yeah, it was kind of like, I don't know, almost Twitter in a way, but we had more characters. I mean, the people that started there were like I did and Voris McCracken and Sean Foreman of Baseball Reference and Christina Carl and Keith Law and Keith Woolner, Sean Lehman started off there. John Sickles was there. There were a lot of people on Usenet that did other baseball things later on. We were kind of the early sabermetric community of the internet.
So kind of like a Mount Rushmore of baseball people, just extended, maybe double.
Yeah. Yeah, it was – I wouldn't say Mount Rushmore, but we had a fun crowd. And it was a good group of nerds to hang out with because I'm a nerd too. The first thing I ever did is – on the web writing was I wrote an article on how to use Bill James's minor league equivalencies. It's not that great a piece of writing. It was 20 years ago, but it got the job done. I started writing more in 2001 when Baseball Primer, now Baseball Think Factory, started up because I had a blog there writing about transactions. So that's really where I picked up a lot of my writing experience and became a much better writer.
Was the Think Factory the place that had win shares at first?
We didn't have win shares. That might have been
Hardball Times. I'm trying to remember how.
Yeah, I think Hardball Times had the win shares.
Because
we didn't really have a lot of data. So
yeah, because I kind of came to sabermetrics and the whole argument around the Moneyball era about 2004. I was a senior in high school. I was a forum member, and people are telling me about all this stuff, and I kind of came to. All of that is about an 18-year-old. I read the first prospectus annual, 05, I think. And so that was kind of my baptism into it. And so I was pretty much hooked by that point.
On Usenet, our baptism was arguing. So it's kind of funny. All the old Usenet writers, we all have kind of the snarky side. because that's what we did. We'd fight with each other. We were kind of mean to web TV users and AOL users. Doug Pappas, he might be before your time. I don't know if you remember him.
I know the name.
He was a Business of Baseball writer for the crowd. Business of Baseball writer who wrote for Baseball Prospectus. He actually passed away from heat stroke about more than 10 years ago now. He would be in the Mets news group, and there was this weird poster there that was actually – banned by the Mets for stalking Steve Phillips.
Oh, my.
And Doug Pappas kept an archive on ways he told this guy to kill himself. And it was actually up on the web.
Wow.
It was a tough group.
Different times, though.
Yeah. Oh, and Dave, I didn't say Dave Cameron. Dave Cameron's from Usenet, too. And so we came up kind of, we were the same age. We were the young guys on Usenet. We're not the young guys anymore, but at the time, we were the young guys.
So outside of baseball, you obviously have very diverse interests. The first and foremost, in my mind, is cats. I have two cats. They're not near me right now, and I will talk about that in just a second. However, how many cats do you have?
I have four cats.
Oh my!
But I have 3,000 square feet, so the ratio is not that horrible.
And names? They are
Galileo, Pandora, Reagan, and Mercutio. Those are my four cats.
Oh my!
So 750 square feet a cat. I think that's actually a reasonable ratio.
Yeah, I think in the Constitution or the bylaws, that's perfectly acceptable.
Yeah, there are ratios that are too much. You can't have five cats in say like a 700 square foot apartment. I think there's some kind of crazy factor that's in that ratio.
We have two, Buster and Oscar. They're named after characters on Arrested Development. What's your cat strategy? You do a lot of radio hits, and that cannot be conducive to having cats in the room. I find myself getting distracted, or worse yet, they think I'm talking to them. They talk back, and then I get confused. So what's your cat strategy when you are doing things like this?
Oh, I don't actually have any strategy. Luckily, the cat that interferes with me most while I'm on the computer, Galileo, he's my oldest cat.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't meow really all that much. He's a very quiet cat. He'll only, if you have food and you're not giving it to him, he'll give like this quack sound, like a duck quack.
Oh, that's awesome.
Quack. So he's not loud, and I can surreptitiously pet him and pay attention to him without it being, so Dan, how did Zips get involved? Well, meow! So you don't have that. The other cats don't interfere as much. Luckily, I do most radio like in the afternoon and evening, and that's usually after the cats have been fed. So then it's lazy times. They're not the most productive cats. There's a lot of lazy times. And so I've had a couple meow incidents, and I've had to throw like a book at a cat. But they've been pretty good when I'm on the radio.
My first four episode strategy was to lock them in the laundry room with a can of wet food, and they start meowing at about the 35 or 40 minute mark, and you can't hear it. Yeah, it's amazing. You can't hear it over the audio on the podcast, but I can hear it to the point where it's distracting to me, and I'm kind of getting annoyed. So today they're locked in the upstairs bathroom with a can of food, but I'm trying to develop a long-term strategy. We have a cat door that goes to our basement, but they're not smart enough to realize when it's locked. And I'm afraid they'll give themselves concussions if cats can do that. I don't know. I've never really researched that. But they don't really understand the concept of a spot being locked that was previously open. And so they just smash their heads on it forever, and that's distracting too. So it's a work in progress, and I don't think I can use your strategy, though, I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, I just let chaos reign. That's my personality. Just chaos and just danger. I never know I'm going to be like on SiriusXM or the sports network, and then meow.
You know, it just enhances the experience for listeners too, I think.
Yeah, well, they say live radio is a dangerous thing.
I think it's a dying thing, but honestly, I digress. You've been talking a lot about esports lately. To someone like me, can you explain what esports is?
Well, esports is just, it's certain video games have kind of generated a highly competitive world in which people like to watch people play games. And when a lot of people like to watch people do something, then eventually money is going to get involved. And when money gets involved, then things become more serious. Games like Dota 2 and League of Legends and Hearthstone, there's big money involved. The Dota 2 championships had something like $18 million in awards for the team. So there's big money involved. And at ESPN, we're covering esports because our philosophy is if it's a competitive thing, it's compelling, people want to see it, that's something that we should be covering.
Have you talked to David Weirs about that? Because he's also, I know, big into that kind of thing.
I have talked to David Weirs about that. I know he's interested in the MOBAs quite a bit. But usually I'm just mean to him on Twitter, because like him and Craig Goldstein, they're the people that are fun to be mean to in a fun, joking way.
Yeah, yeah, it's not quite like the days back on your lists or anything. It's a little bit more tame. Believe it or not, Twitter is a little more tame than things used to be. But
oh, it's much. People think I'm a sarcastic jerk now, and I kind of am. But I'm much mellower than I was 20 years ago. I remember the first thing I said that got a lot of hate mail. When Sean Dunstan was with the Orioles, I said that he walked less often than Christopher Reeve.
Oh my goodness, that's something.
Yeah, that is mean and snarky. I'm actually much nicer than that on Twitter. Even when someone says something like really nasty to me, if it's clever, I appreciate it and I'll even retweet it. But if it's not, I will try to give them a second chance. I'll tell them, okay, that wasn't a very good insult. I'll give you 15 minutes to find another one, and then I'll block you if you don't, because I don't appreciate incompetence.
Yeah, there's nothing really worse than lazy snark, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, someone tells me I'm fat, like, oh, I figured that out. Jeez.
So what's the story behind Zim Smash? Is that your gaming account? Has that picked up steam lately?
I'm very bad at dividing my talking over multiple Twitter accounts. So I haven't been very good at using it. And since I am writing about esports professionally, I have more of an excuse to talk gaming on my main account. So I haven't really used it all that much. I should have probably built it up over time, but as I said, I'm not very competent about hitting the little button on TweetDeck to tweet from the other account. So it's not a great Twitter account until I can do more with it.
I'm guilty of that too with separate accounts too. What you keep talking about something called Hearthstone. What's that?
Oh, that's a digital card game. Okay. The players refer to it as wizard poker. It's kind of a cross between Magic and poker in a way, in that it's the same kind of, you know, mythical creatures fighting using cards, but it also has a lot of the random aspects of poker, so that everybody's kind of competitive and you need a lot of hands to determine who the best player is.
Is this something that just popped up recently?
This came up a couple years ago. This is from Blizzard, which, if you're into gaming at all, they're one of the big heavyweights. They're the people behind World of Warcraft.
I played StarCraft for a while.
So you know Blizzard.
10 years ago. Yeah, so I know of Blizzard. Not much about it, though.
And StarCraft had a competitive scene for a long time, too. It's faded a little bit as they haven't really done too much with the game, but there is a recent expansion. But Blizzard, they made a card game that was kind of like Magic, based off of World of Warcraft lore. And it became very, very popular very quickly. They have something like 20 million accounts that play the game. So it became popular very quickly because it's a simpler game than Magic, and it's designed very well for the internet. There's a lot of, you know, tactic. I can't think of the word, but forget the word. Tactile. I couldn't think of the word tactile. There's a very tactile feel to it. The cards kind of just pop out at you. The mechanics are simple, but surprisingly deep when you get into the game. So it's a fun game that I really like to cover. There's a lot of analysis type things you can do with it. So when I heard internally that we were going to be doing something with esports, because I've been kind of complaining and saying, we got to do this for years. I was like, no, I got to write some Hearthstone. So that's what I did.
So what would you say is your favorite game if you had to pick just one?
Probably Crusader Kings 2. I have played that game so much.
And so what's the format? What's the...
It's a grand strategy game in which you are taking one of about like 700 dynasties in Europe from the time of Charlemagne to the fall of Constantinople. You pick a family and you kind of backstab and plot marriage alliances and build up your dynasty over centuries, and it's a little like Civilization of European diplomacy in a way.
So forgive my ignorance. Is this console? Is this PC? Is this board game?
That's for the PC. It's a PC game, but it's a lot of fun. That's probably my favorite game of all time.
And when was that released?
2013, I want to say. It's one of these Paradox games. That's a company that makes these really in-depth strategy games, like about World War II and the Victorian era.
But for the most part, it's held up the test of time.
Oh, it has. It has a popular fan base. They've had a lot of expansions. It's the same maker of Cities Skylines, which I don't know if you've played, but that became very popular very quickly. It's probably my favorite game right now.
Okay, so that's obviously a very big part of what you do outside of baseball. Do you have any other sports that you keep an eye on, or is it pretty much strictly baseball for you?
Well, I watch football very religiously. I just haven't written about football. Sure. There's a lot of people writing about football, and baseball kind of takes up most of my time. But I am a serious football fan. Basketball to a lesser degree. I never really got into hockey.
I kind of had to with Minnesota here, and I grew
up.
Yeah,
you have to.
I grew up in a city that's big on it too.
Yeah, it's not a Baltimore imperative.
No, I suppose not. So, as far as football goes, I mean, are you in the market? You must be in the market for the Browns, which is unfortunate.
No, well, I'm near Cincinnati, not Cleveland. So,
Bengals. That's
yeah,
right.
I'm not a Bengals fan though. It's weird. I ended up a Steelers fan.
Whoa.
Despite being from Baltimore, because the Colts moved when I was a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad's family was from the Pittsburgh area, so I became a Steelers fan because nobody told me that in another 12, 13 years, there was going to be another football team in Baltimore that was going to be the biggest rival of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So most of my friends adopted the Ravens, so I'm kind of in this weird situation in which I'm originally from Baltimore and I'm a Steelers fan. It's like, but it's not my fault.
How wild was the Bengals Steelers playoff game for you to watch then?
Oh, that was a crazy game. I'm not sure either team really deserved to win that game.
Not really.
And there are a lot of Steelers fans wherever you go. I mean, I'm near Cincinnati, but I saw as many Steelers jerseys around than Bengals. And to be honest, I could never be a Bengals fan simply because of the whole Who Day Nation thing, which drives me nuts. Who Day?
I don't really understand the derivation, but it drives me crazy just because it sounds so stupid.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm being rude. I don't know. But it just sounds so dumb to me.
Yeah, it's one of my least favorite catchphrases in a team. I remember I saw a shirt with the Keep Calm and Carry On logo, but it was Keep Calm and Who Day. I was like, ugh. And wasn't Who Day one of Saddam Hussein's kids?
That would be a pretty good angle to take in a railing against that for sure.
So I assume that you're a Minnesota Wild fan.
Yeah, well, last night's game didn't go so well. Yeah, I am though. So last night it was kind of like a person who hates themselves not trifecta, but double play, because the Wild played the early game on our local network, and then the Timberwolves played really late against the Lakers, and they both lost. It was just kind of typical. I think Minnesota teams had like a 20-some game losing streak in January. And February hasn't been much better. But, yeah, so I would say I'm a Wild fan. I'm a Timberwolves fan, and I hate myself.
I have to say, though, I never really cared for the name the Wild. I mean, the North Stars was a better name. I don't like mascot, like, team nicknames that are abstract concepts.
Very ambiguous.
Yeah, it's a little too – I mean, Orlando Magic, I guess that's okay. But, like, Miami Heat, that's a little too abstract for me. I mean, be the Comets, you have that logo. But the Wild is a little too abstract for me. It's like, so are you the feeling of being wild or the wild nature? Because that's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, none of it really makes any sense. And the mascot is like this guy named Norty that's like kind of a guy, but I think he's an animal too. I don't know. I've never really gotten a good look at him because he kind of freaks me out, kind of like the alien at Space Aliens. It's a restaurant near here, kind of like Pizza Planet on Toy Story. And so I get kind of freaked out by mascots, even as somebody who's turning 30 in just a couple weeks.
What about Pierre the Pelican?
You know, I don't like
face.
Any mascot, man. I mean, literally, Crunch, the Minnesota Timberwolf, nope, stay away. And he's pretty innocuous. TC Bear for the Twins, which a bear, I don't really – I mean, we have bears.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of things. It's like I mean, the Phillies are like, okay, what's a Philly? I don't know. Let's make a big green thing.
What's like a horn for a nose?
But you see, that's the good thing about the Orioles is the mascot is very logical. It's the same Oriole that's on the – okay, we're the Baltimore Orioles. Let's have the mascot be an Oriole. They didn't say, okay, we're going to make Pedro the alien or something. They just said, no, it's going to be an Oriole, and that Oriole will also be on the hat. So you actually understand why they exist.
Yeah,
so,
I feel like the boardroom meeting for that was probably pretty brief.
Yeah, okay. Okay, guys, we're the Baltimore Orioles. What's our mascot? An Oriole. We're done.
Exactly.
That's the way you had to do it.
So you're a member of the BBWAA. I believe that's a recent development. Is that correct?
You mean me and the BBWAA?
Yeah.
BBWAA? Yeah, that is a recent development. I had actually – previously I just figured because ESPN submits some writers every year for membership to the national chapter. And I just figured it'd be easier just for me to wait for my turn in the order. But I was encouraged to apply for the BBWAA. I was told that, yeah, you'll get in if you apply. But you got to ask. We don't just go around recruiting people. So I asked and they let me in. So that pleases me quite a bit more than – I mean, it's fun to vote for the Hall of Fame, but I come from a non-journalism background, and I've worked really hard to become, like, you know, a real journalist. I know a lot of the guys who do a lot of stat work are kind of sometimes viewed as slumming it as writers until they can snag a front office job. But that's not me. I've consulted before, but I don't want a front office job. I want to work in media. I like talking. I like writing. I like doing all that stuff. So there was a little feeling of validation that I'm a real writer and that other writers will consider me a real writer. So I was pretty pleased about that. I mean, really the motivation between the Baseball Writers Association isn't even to vote for the Hall of Fame. It's about press access. It's an organization that ensures that journalists can get access to teams to, you know, do their job. Now, while I could always get media credentials by asking, I mean, it wasn't like a hard thing. I mean, I just call someone with the team and say, I'm Dan Zaborski, ESPN. Can I get credentialed for so-and-so date? It was never a problem. But now in the Baseball Writers Association, I have a badge and I can just walk in, which is pretty cool. It makes my options more open. I don't have to feel like a little kid asking for cookies.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing I've always felt. I've had badges, not BBWAA, but team issued for 2013 and 2015. But in the meantime, there is a level of inclusion that I did not have in 2014 that you kind of feel with a badge like that. And you can go in, I believe, to any stadium with that. But are you a part of the Reds chapter?
I am in the Cincinnati chapter.
Okay. Since technically it's a city, yeah, rather than a team.
Yeah, they have chapters for each major league city. And I think they actually have rules if they lose their team, they have to like find a new chapter in a couple of years. But I was accepted into the Cincinnati chapter. They're not making me eat the chili, I hope, because I don't like the Cincinnati chili.
No, it's not. It's horrible. It looks terrible.
It tastes like pumpkin pie filling. I like pumpkin pie, but when you're eating a meaty dish, you know, that's not really what you want to taste.
No, there's something to be said for expectations of what you're eating and what you're tasting.
Yeah, like I once was messing with my mom. She comes over and I'm eating hummus. She's like, what do you have? And she was excited and she likes hummus. And so I said, no, I'm eating sweet almond cream. She's like, ooh, can I have some? So I gave her a taste of the sweet almond cream. And even though she likes hummus, when you're expecting sweet almond cream, whatever that is, I don't even know what sweet almond cream is. is that even a thing? But she believed that and she tasted it and it's hummus. She's like, oh, God. I'm like, it's just hummus. Like, I know, but I thought it was sweet almond cream.
I get a feeling that would be like eating earwax or something, that change of flavors.
Yeah, it's not what you expect. And it's the same with the Cincinnati chili. It has like chocolate in it and nutmeg, and they put it on spaghetti for some reason, which just is weird. It's like, I mean, I'm not a Texan or anything, but Texans know chili that on a basic level, it's meat and chili. And that's pretty much what it is. I mean, I can even do without tomato. I know people like tomato most, but more often than not. But just meat and chili, that is an elegant thing and a delicious dish.
I feel like beans are required. I know that it exists without it, but I can't have it without beans.
I like beans, But there's something to be said for the purity of meat and chili.
So I was reading the constitution of the BBWAA. I would like to join. I don't really know what the process is. And with my Fangraphs tie-ins and other things, I could probably someday get in there. And the hope is that I do. But in the constitution, it lists salaries for the president and vice president. And I believe it's probably from the original writing, but I think it's like $1 per year.
Yeah, it's $2 for the president, $1 for the vice president. And simply because despite the prominence you see with it in baseball, it's a small organization. It's done on a shoestring budget. There's no marketing budget or big fancy offices. For my dues, I had to write a paper check. Which was kind of funny when I realized that I had to write a paper check, because I hadn't written a paper check probably in 3 or 4 years. I had no idea where my checkbook was. I actually had to order checks so I'd have a paper check.
Wow.
And it actually took me to the fourth try to get the check right, because the first time I signed in the memo area instead of the signature, and then I ripped it, taking it out of the checkbook the following two times, because, again, I haven't written a check in a long time.
So you said it's on a shoestring budget. Is that why they're still hosted by Angel Fire on their website?
Oh, have you seen the website is a much better website than it used to be.
Okay, so it has improved.
Have you seen the lime green one?
I think that's the one I remember. I don't know for sure though.
Oh, well, the old one was looked like a GeoCities page.
Yeah, that's GeoCities, what I was looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole page was this bright, that lime green, you know, one of those 16 basic colors that you'd see from like old CGA monitors from the 80s.
Well, it's like when I was taking my HTML classes in high school.
Yeah, that's what it was, because it's a small organization. It has one goal, which is to make it accessible for writers. And they do that goal very well. And they stand up for their members. If you don't get in, then they take that very seriously and will make sure you get into your where you need to go.
Well, that's obviously a very bold task and something hopefully I can someday join. I had asked when we had talked off the air before the show if you had prepared for a game that we're going to play here. This is the first time we've ever played a game on Midwest Wave.
I like games. Games are good.
Yes, and it's for making your own the most meh, M-E-H, rotation that you can since the 1994 strike. Obviously, as someone who's watched the Twins pretty much in that timeline, the last 22, 23 years, I've seen a lot of meh rotations. Oddly enough, my five does not incorporate a Minnesota Twin or a former Twin. A lot of people I thought would be future Twins when they were doing their thing. My honorable mention has a couple Twins. They're actually, oh my gosh, all four of the five played for the Twins. But I understand, do I understand correctly that you have a rotation to share with us?
Well, I was thinking of more a solid group of like the whole rotation as meh rather than individual players.
I think individual, so this is good.
Because I think meh is kind of a feeling just beyond mediocre. Meh has to have kind of an emotional component to you. It can't just be a lousy pitching staff. Like the Twins, my favorite meh pitching staff, I think, would be the 2013 team. Because the Twins have had a lot of meh. A lot of meh and a lot of. They've had a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And that was but they always usually had at least one pitcher who was interesting. I mean, yeah, when they had a lot of Boof Bonzer, they also had Johan Santana in the rotation. So it's like, oh, we have Santana. That's not a meh rotation. Right. They always had, you know, Brad Radke when he was good, Kevin Tappany when he was good, mm-hmm. some Bly Levin and Viola.
Scott Erickson.
But the 2013 team, I mean, it was Diamond and Mike Pelfrey and Sam Deduno and Kevin Correa. I think Pedro Hernandez. Yeah, Pedro Hernandez was got a lot of starts that year. And that was a rotation you looked at and you're like, oh, well, how did this happen? Are we in AAA? Is there relegation in baseball? No one told us.
And also three other guys that got 10 starts each. 6.53 ERA from Kyle Gibson, 7.21 from Vance Worley, 4.05 from Andrew Albers, who couldn't break glass with his fastball. Liam Hendricks had 8 starts with a 6.85 ERA. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So when you look for meh, you look for that almost soul crushing blandness. For an Oriole fan, my favorite meh rotation is the 2001 team. This was a team where Jason Johnson led the team with 10 wins, had like a FIP over 5 something. And it was Jason Johnson, Josh Towers, Jose Mercedes.
Oh, man.
Calvin Maduro.
I do not remember Calvin Maduro.
Willis Roberts. It had a little bit of Pat Henkin, but kind of Pat Henkin at the end of his career.
Sidney Ponson.
Yeah, this was Sidney Ponson, not in one of his good years. And they had even some like depressing old names on the bench. Like they had John Wasden. They had Ryan Kohlmeyer, who they were big on, but was absolutely terrible. They had a very ancient Alan Mills. It was a very mad team. The rotation wasn't the worst ever, but just nobody on it was very good. And I remember I used to complain, well, the Orioles, see, they weren't even rebuilding then. They thought they were going to be an okay team. That was the weird thing about those late 90s, early 2000 Orioles. They always thought they were a player away from having a solid team, which they never were. They never even realized it. And they really thought Jason Johnson would really be an ace. But he wasn't. And I remember I would complain, like, if Jason Johnson's your best pitcher, there's kind of a problem. I remember that would make people mad because they'd write to me like, how dare you? Jason Johnson has the diabetes. And I'm like, but they don't give you credit for blood sugar in baseball. I didn't say he's bad because he can't process sugar. I mean, a lot of people can. And he's bad because he allows a lot of runs and doesn't strike anybody out ever.
That had to be a painful season watching Cal Ripken with a triple slash of .239, .276, .361 as well.
Yeah, and that's most great players will have a pretty sad final season, unless they have a really good season that gives them a motivation to walk away, like Chipper Jones. But that was the end of Ripken's career. I mean, the streak was already long gone. They were just going through the motions. I mean, he had that big kind of revival in 1999, but that was like a one season thing. And Ripken was so done in 2001. So it was very sad because you'd watch him and think, I wish he had retired after last year.
Can't hate on any team that had Buddy Groom as the closer.
Buddy Groom. He did have a very cool name.
Now he led the team with 11 saves. That's incredible. A guy who had 6 saves, former Twin Mike Trombley, have some good memories and some bad of him too. But that bullpen, a young BJ Ryan was just getting his start, walking 5 batters per 9 innings. That's some kind of Motley Crue there.
Yeah, BJ Ryan, he was a fun pitcher when his career really took off. I was very sad. I mean, he had one of the, he at some point he started like striking out like 12, 13 batters a game. But that was after 2001. He wasn't really good in 2001. I mean, he was never a control pitcher by any means, but he did get that under control. but he blew out his arm in, I think, 2007 and had like one season where he came back and then he messed up his arm again. He could have still been pitching today. He'd be 30. He's Joe Nathan's age. He could have still been around.
Especially as a lefty. He's a lefty and a pulse.
Yeah, lefty I'm forever. Yeah.
I'm left-handed and I have a pulse and look at me.
Yeah, I see. That's what you have to do if you want a kid in baseball. You kind of when they're young, like tie their right arm behind their back so they don't get to use it. Make them a lefty.
There you go. I don't know that my mom did that, but I couldn't rule it out. I do have my rotation. We can go over the honorable mentions first. 4 former Twins, not by design, just because they were meh.
Oh, there's Carlos, design. They go together.
Carlos Silva. Elmer DeSens.
I remember there was a year that he developed a new pitch and he pitched well for half a season. Like people are like, oh, projections are crazy. Elmer DeSens has turned it around. I'm like, let's not jump to too many conclusions.
Sidney Ponson, who you're obviously very familiar with.
Yeah. But by that point, this was after, because he had a messed up shoulder, that he went the Todd Stottlemyre route of pretending it didn't happen.
So not good.
It never really works. There's always someone that tears a labrum and says, I'm just going to pitch through it and, like, you know, pretend that that my shoulder's not messed up. And I don't think it ever seems to work. I remember Stottlemyre, I always think of Todd Stottlemyre with that, because he messed up his shoulder, decided to pitch through it, and he changed his pitching motion to a style that put strain on his elbow, which he then tore and needed Tommy John surgery.
Not well construed.
Yeah, the injuring, when you're a professional athlete, the ignoring your injury until it goes away is not a good idea. I can do it because I don't really need most of my body parts to do anything connected with my career. Like, I messed up my knee a bit crawling at the St. Louis City Museum some years ago, crawling through, like, a hole. Seriously, I don't know if you've ever been to the St. Louis City
Museum. No, I haven't. I've never been to St. Louis.
It's not really a museum. It's like a giant obstacle course, like modern art with, like, ladders and places to crawl through and, like, a World War II plane to climb up into with a ladder and scaffolding and a weird bus that's suspended for the roof. And I was at a friend's bachelor – not really his bachelor party. It was more like a pre-wedding reception. They actually had it at the St. Louis City Museum. So we were all drunk, wearing suits, and crawling and climbing all night. And I twisted my knee. It hurt for a couple of days. I figured it would go away. And the pain went away. But ever since then, when I extend my knee after standing up, there's a very audible pop. So something happened. But I'm not a professional athlete. My knee can be terrible and it can pop, and it's not going to prevent me from doing my job. If you're a pitcher and your shoulder is bad, that prevents you from doing your job. So you cannot ignore it.
Yeah, no, I suppose not. So my last two honorable mentions are Jason Marquis and Brad Radke. Had to get Radke in there too, obviously.
Oh, you can't put Radke in a meh. I am ashamed of you. Radke had some really good seasons. I think he only had I don't think he had any season after his rookie year in which he wasn't at least an average pitcher. And you're putting him on your meh list.
I sorted by strikeout rate to kind of get some names, and he was near the bottom. So honestly, it's
being
unfair.
But he had such good control.
He did. He was fantastic when it came to control.
He could survive. See, I'm not even a Twins fan, and I should say a loud expletive and, like, hang up on you right now. For putting Radke.
Well, let's
on
not
that
do that. We want to keep that label off of the podcast. Now, the five guys that I went for a rotation, I went 5-1. Aaron Cook is my number five starter. I think he had a season with
Aaron Cook.
Didn't he have a season where he struck out like 1.9 batters per nine a couple years?
Oh yeah,
that was
fun. I mean, he did have a good run in Colorado, but what you're talking about was his Red Sox stint, and that was funny. Because he started off with the Red Sox with, like, a really good ERA and a really terrible FIP. He had something like a 3-something ERA after 5 starts, and his FIP was like 6. And people were like, Aaron Cook disproves the Sabre guys. See, he's maintaining this. But of course, it didn't continue. And by the end of the season, his ERA was 5.5. It was worse than his FIP, actually. And so it's like, ha. So it was hard at that point to say, hey, remember when you said that Aaron Cook proved that batting average of balls in play was complete bull? Tell me how that worked out.
People always seem to forget when they're wrong, especially the people that flame you the loudest.
Yeah, and nobody ever forgets if I'm wrong, so I never forget. I still occasionally hear about my analysis for the Alfonso Soriano-Brad Wilkerson trade, which did in fact turn out pretty terrible.
So my number four starter is John Garland.
John Garland is funny because he's actually still young enough. He could still be pitching. He only turned 36 recently.
Wow.
And he's one of those guys, because he came up so young, he feels like he should be like 50 now.
Well, and he's one of those guys I actually get confused when I was young. I got confused younger. It was John Garland, John Rausch. And then there's another John who's scouting with the Red Sox right now, who I met at Target Field, and now his name has escaped me again. And I think they all came up with the White Sox at about the same time. And so it was like, okay, you want me to remember all these different Johns, and this blows my mind.
Well, John Roush was a humongous dude. He was like the Andre the Giant of pitching.
Well, and he had the wedding rings tattooed on his neck, but I think he got divorced, which is kind of
you have to be careful with tattoos. And if you're getting a tattoo, get something that likely isn't going to change. Like, I don't have any tattoos, but if I got a name on a tattoo, I might get my name, because I'm not likely to have a large breakup with myself.
Not likely.
Yeah, maybe put like some mathematical formula, which isn't likely to change. Put things that aren't going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. Number three, Paul Byrd.
Paul Byrd, I remember him. Indians, Braves. He was weird. He was always okay. I don't think he ever had a really good season.
I mean, he had that old school pitching where he did the wind up and put the hands over his head. And I always enjoyed watching him pitch. You know, he had a few nice seasons, but just very uninspiring, very uninteresting. I always thought, and the funny thing is, with all five of these guys, I'm surprised none of them were ever Twins on this final list. The honorable mentions, whatever.
Yeah, well, Ponson wasn't on your final list, was he? Because he was a Twin briefly.
Well, no, Silva, Ponson, okay, and Radke were all Twins. Radke, of course, but we'll boot him out because he was a little better than Meh.
We're cool then if you let Radke off the list.
We'll boot him, yeah. Joe Saunders for number two. Again, the guy that was – I feel like he was rumored to be a Minnesota Twin for about five off seasons in a row. And
that's
really
not right.
Really, really not that inspiring. I think he had a couple decent years with the Angels, if I'm not mistaken, and then has had I don't even know if he was in the league at all last year. He had some time with Seattle, had some time. Did he go to the Rockies too?
I don't think he was ever a Rocky. He was in Seattle. He had a brief stint in Baltimore. Well, two brief stints in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. They actually Baltimore, the Orioles actually acquired him twice during the post-good phase of his career, which I don't know how that happened.
You got to have arms.
Yeah, but
– especially lefties, right?
The idea is to have him to be better than Joe Saunders at the end, because he was just really hanging on by the really just by his fingernails to the – I think he pitched in the minors this year.
He might have. My number one is a lefty, Seattle Mariners. Do you have any – he pitched for the Mariners. I think he pitched for the Angels. Do you have any guesses?
Let me think. See, when you said Mariners first, I was going to guess someone like Greg Hibbard.
I went more mainstream.
Is it Jared
Washburn. I watched him pitch a one-hitter at Safeco in like 2009. And then Russell Branyon hit an opposite field 3-0 home run at Safeco, which is amazing for a left-handed hitter to go the other way at Safeco out. And it was just amazing. He one hit, I believe, the Orioles, actually.
If you want another good man lefty, Sterling Hitchcock.
Yeah, oh yeah. And I think if I would have gone a little bit older, I think I could have found, you know, a lot more names that would definitely fit the bill. The biggest thing for me, I sorted by strikeout rate, and then I kind of had to adjust for context just because of how much the game has changed. You know, Kirk Reeder would have been good. Terry Mulholland, Steve Sparks, I believe he's doing some analysis for the Astros now. There's a lot of names on the list that are a little bit on the older side, but
I would never put a knuckleballer in the Met category.
That's what kind of kept me from doing it.
Because knuckleballers are kind of like the pure Buddhism pictures. I mean, they just put that – they don't put any spin on the ball, and they just let fate take its course.
I put a grievous – I missed a grievous – Jake Westbrook would have been a good one too.
A long time ago, I wrote a poem about Jason Hockamy.
Yep, I remember that picture, not the poem.
I mean, it'd be weird if you remember the poem, because I didn't publish it or anything. I was like, why are you in my house?
Don't worry about it.
I called it the Pleasure Dome of Jason Hockamy, and it was kind of an ode to those pitchers who never strike any guys out, that they embrace fate by just throwing the ball and letting the batter decide. And that was a fun little poem. I Jason Hockamy, he was one of those players who you never really know how to say his name unless you knew how to say his name. Mm-hmm. So I would continually rhyme it with wrong sayings of his name, like 10 different ways to say his name wrong. Jacome, Jacome, just
I remember him pitching against the Twins. They always had kind of fun guys. Was he with Oakland, did you say?
He was in a few places. He wasn't in Oakland. He was with the Mets. And the Indians.
I'm remembering him wrong, but I know he pitched against Twins when I was really young.
Another fun mad guy with the Orioles was Rick Krivda.
And oh man, you're bringing back all kinds of names that I remember from when I was a kid.
And he was actually part of better Orioles teams than the later ones, but I always liked Krivda because, well, he wasn't really that good, but I don't know. Maybe I just liked his name. Krivda's a cool name.
It is funny how names can kind of alter how you feel about a guy. I've, you know, much more as a kid, obviously not now when I'm trying to do more unbiased analysis. And it is just funny though, like I would like or dislike a guy off the bat based on his name when I was a kid.
Yeah. Names are funny that way.
So the thing I wanted to wrap with, save the best for last, I think, as we come down to the home stretch here, was Zips. How did you create them? How did you name it? What's the general concept and idea that made you dive into projections?
Okay, well, the whole story is kind of crazy, but every bit of it is true, because some of it sounds like a lie, but it's completely true.
Okay.
Well, the origin of Zips is in the 90s during the Usenet days. I was talking a lot with a good friend of mine named Chris Dial. I don't know if you know him. You might have seen him around Twitter. He's on the board of Saber. Mm-hmm. So he's around. He's friends with all the Saber guys, but he hasn't really written anything in like 10 years. Well, we were talking about how we could probably make a basic projection system that would just do everything just as well as any other thing. It's kind of the same idea that Tango Tiger later had with Marcel. It was that kind of thing initially. And we talked about that. It was like 95, 96, somewhere around there. And we never really came about. But later on, I had started blogging about baseball transactions. And I did have a math background back from college. So I thought, hey, you know, maybe I should revisit this and make a really cool projection system. Because it's a useful thing for someone writing about baseball, especially transactions, to have access to. I know a lot of writers always ask me for projections because projections are very useful because you're always writing about the future, just a large part of your time as a writer. So I developed Zips over 2003 and 2004. It became a lot more complex, obviously, than the original idea of a basic projection system. I named it Zips because it was the first projection system that utilized Voris McCracken's Dips research. Mm-hmm. So I wanted it to rhyme with Dips. So I saw Zaborski projection system, because then you had the P and the S. So that would have been Sips, but I kind of thought that sounds like a juice box for hipsters. Like, go get some Sips. So I changed it to Zips. I had it all capitalized, and that looked like a shoe name. You know, Zips. We've got my Zips shoes, my sneakers. So I made the I little because when I was a kid, I liked California Highway Patrol chips. I liked Dukes of Hazzard, but I couldn't work in a Dukes of Hazzard reference. So initially, I wrote Zips like chips with a capital Z, little I, which is from Zaborski, just so you can have a vowel in there. P, large P and little S. But I actually made a typo the first time I did it. So it was just little I, but a large S. And it had already been picked up by some people at that point. Jay Jaffe, back during his blogging days, he had written about it. So it just became Zips.
So if I use it with a small S, you'll know that I'm paying homage to the origin?
Yeah, or you're misspelling it. It's possible. Or miscapitalizing. That's not really
I can't have that on my conscience. I'm kind of a spelling nerd.
Well, I guess that if you had my last name, you'd probably be really annoyed a lot of the time.
True. What is the craziest thing that has happened to you based on creating it as you know, someone maybe someone telling you they love the system or something crazy that has happened to you related to Zips?
Well, I guess on one side, the craziest thing is it probably helped me eventually get a job writing about baseball because it always gave me something to separate myself from other people. So that's I didn't really expect to be writing for ESPN 20 years ago when I got into sabermetrics. So that was kind of a surprise. Moneyball kind of made us all respectable. Mm-hmm. I think the funniest thing that ever happened was I got a very kind of polite but angry email about how I was using Zips projections without crediting the creator of Zips, and I apparently had access to Zips that hadn't been public released, so the guy was worried I had been making them up, and I didn't really respond to that because I don't know how you respond to that. It's like, no, I do the Zips, I make the Zips, so I do have access to the Zips, so I don't need to credit myself. So that's why since then I've always had in my Twitter profile just some reference to I make the Zips. I think right now it's I fry up the Zips.
Yeah, you have a key. You have a key to the Zips vault.
Yeah, so it's a running joke that people will joke, "Hey, you didn't credit the Zips guy."
So to close, and you know that I had to breach this subject before we do it. What's your relationship with Murray Chass?
Murray! I don't think we have any kind of personal relationship.
That you know of.
Yeah, I was very happy that he called me out because
you stay off his lawn and he stays off yours?
Yeah, I hope he does. I mean,
that you know of?
I mean, if I see him on my lawn, I'll call his caretaker and have him
nicely pick him up.
Nice. Chess, he doesn't like stats at all. And he's extremely bitter. He did a lot of great work with reporting labor issues, and he'll always have that. But I've always had an issue with him, not because of anything about anti-sabermetrics. There's lots of guys that are anti-sabermetrics. It was a blog entry he wrote about Stan Musial a few years ago, where he accused him of being a racist based on a story that Kurt Flood was turned away at his restaurant. And when in fact that story had been debunked by Kurt Flood decades ago, and that Musial was actually very upset when he found out it had happened, made amends and made sure that Kurt Flood was taken care of at this restaurant for the rest of his life. And Chass essentially brought up that story again, attacked Musial, and complained that he was given a medal by the president. And he wrote this blog entry, Musial, no man of honor, Mr. President. And it was pretty bad. Joe Posnanski tore it apart pretty easily. And that was a real hatchet job. That's not what journalists do. That's the kind of thing that people hate journalists about, mm-hmm. that they're petty, that they don't pay attention to things, that they settle scores. And it was a real douchey thing. And so I've been tough on Chass since then because I thought it was ridiculous, and I thought it was unethical to act in that manner. So I take shots. And it's not like he doesn't take shots. He once – earlier, he had a piece where it was a smaller part where he actually dug apart one of my ESPN pieces and picked apart my grammar. And he made like 10 grammatical mistakes in his taking apart. And he always takes shots at his old Times co-workers like Tyler Kepner. And so I was very happy that he spent his Hall of Fame blog entry mostly ranting about me. Saying my name over and over again so that people will remember it. Giving me a cool nickname, which he thought probably was a real insult. You know, the digital dandy. When someone told me that he had written about me, I'm like, oh, I got to read this. And I was very excited that he had given me a cool nickname because the digital dandy is a really cool nickname. It makes me want to like write all my pieces wearing a top hat or something. Because you got to be classy. So at the time, I knew I was likely to be accepted into the Baseball Writers Association, and I really wanted to shove that in his face because it would annoy him quite a bit to know that. I was briefly considering that when it became official that I'd send like a courier with like an announcement for him and like balloons, maybe like a skywriter over his house. I decided that'd be a little too douchey, so I didn't go that route.
Would you say that feuding with Murray Chess has been good for the brand?
Oh, it has been good because, I mean, he said my name like 20 times in like a paragraph. Because, I mean, nice. That's how marketing works. You got to get your name into the readers. Now, I mean, he probably only has a couple hundred people who ever read his stuff, and they're mostly sure. people who like to make fun of it. But I always appreciate getting taken apart by a Spink Award winner. So I was very pleased by the whole situation. I don't think he'd be pleased that I was pleased, but that makes it even better.
So speaking of your brand, how can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at DZymborski on Twitter. That's DZymborski. If you're Canadian, that's SZymborski. SKI, I actually just misspelled.
You just misspelled your own name.
I misspelled my own name.
Brutal. So that's how I wanted to wrap, was to give you a chance to put that out there. Again, this is episode number 5 of Midwest Swing. I want to thank you for joining us on behalf of Dan Zymborski, Andy Carlson, who painstakingly had to listen to 73 minutes of us going back and forth. Of course, I am Brandon Warren at Brandon_Warren. Find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod or at Cold Omaha MN. Thanks for joining us and have a great day.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.